The TomTom Club, and the song is The Wordy Rapping Hood, and it is the opening theme song for this Little Wowers program that you've stumbled across called The Wordy Rapping Hood. Tracy Hutchison is my name, with you through till 1 o'clock here on RPPFM. It's great to have your company on this Friday. Now, the premise for this show is that we find Peninsula locals, people who call the peninsula home, and have a good old natter with them for about an hour and find out why they love this place that we all call home and what they've done in their life to get them to this point. And I'm really super thrilled to welcome a fellow RPPFM presenter running for the Arts Party in Dunkley. She's also the general manager and producer of the Little Theatre Company. She is Sally Bailiu, and I'm thrilled to welcome her to the other side of the microphone, which must be a little bit weird, Sal, into being interviewed on RPP as opposed to doing all the interviewing. But
It is. But actually, I'm really looking forward to it because it's like no pressure.
No pressure. All the pressure's over this side.
Yeah, that's
no
right.
Pressure at all.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me on today.
Pleasure. We are 8 days out from the federal election campaign, and we will talk a lot about your decision to run for the Arts Party. But firstly, first question on this program is always what brought you to the peninsula. So how did you find yourself here?
Well, I've returned to the peninsula, Tracy. I grew up here, actually. I went to Mount Eliza Primary School. And then I went to Turek College, and then I went to Frankston Technical College. So I grew up here, spent my childhood, and went out into the world from that. And it's really as I've come, as I've gotten older, I've wanted to come back here because, well, we all know how glorious is the Mornington Peninsula. Mm.
It is a great place to live and work and, in your case, raise a family as well. So we're going to kind of roll backwards and then roll forward. So
okay.
We're going to stay back in the young Sally Martin.
Yes.
Growing up here on the peninsula and schooling here and then working out what the hell you were going to do with the rest of your life. You got a little bit of an interesting first taste of being in the spotlight very early on in your life on the front cover of an album. So let's just get that one out of the way.
Oh, yes, of course. All right, yes. Australian Crawl's Boys Light Up.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So the 1980 Australian Crawl record that features you on the front cover.
Yep.
You were obviously friends. It was a great sort of synergy between the Turek girls and the Peninsula boys.
Yeah, there was. And there was so much going on. There were so many musicians, really, that actually came out of particularly the boys' school at that time. And David and James were my neighbours, David and James Rain, and we were all great friends. And I was at media studies at RMIT, and David was at Swinburne doing film and television, and we used to hang out quite a lot. And he rang me one day and said, "Look, they really want somebody to pose on the beach. Would you be interested?" And I jumped at the chance. I thought it was a fantastic idea. I was a little nervous, actually, later on telling my parents about it when I saw the album cover, which is such a beautiful photograph taken by a local photographer, or a man who lives locally here too now, Graham Webber. It just became so, so big. It was plastered everywhere. And I remember being with my mother at Christmas time, just a couple of months, I think, after it was released. And we were Christmas shopping, and I hadn't told her yet. And we were walking along the street, and we walked past a record shop, and she said, "Oh, I want to go in here and get something." And we walked in, and the entire wall was covered with maybe 30 or 40 of these posters of the album cover. And I grabbed her arm, and I took her outside. I said, "Mum, I've got to tell you something."
And of course, the kicker in that is that you're not wearing clothes on the front of that
album cover.
So for those who've not seen that incredibly iconic 1980 album cover of Australian Crawl, have you still got a poster?
No, I haven't got a poster. I haven't actually. I've got an album. But funnily enough, quite recently on Arts About, the show I do on Sundays and Wednesdays, we did a sequence on album cover art, and we got Graham Webber on the line and we talked to him, and I admitted to him that I never actually had a copy of it, and he sent me an artist's print. So I now have a very beautiful artist's print of the album cover, which I'm most proud of.
Sally Bailiu is our guest on The Wordy Rapping Hood, RPPFM, a voice that would be familiar to to you as the presenter of Arts About here on RPP. She's also standing for the Arts Party in this upcoming federal election. So we're getting in outside the window where you can't talk about federal politics on the radio, which I think is about a 48-hour blackout. So we're getting in early and talking to you about why you're going to stand for the Arts Party. I just want to find out a little bit more about how, so you've obviously had that introduction into being around creatives, knowing the reins and ending up on an album cover. What happened after that? Like what was the, I guess, sort of lighting that fuse about or that flame for you in terms of really getting you interested in working more in the arts? What were you thinking at that time?
Look, it actually stemmed a little bit, probably even earlier than that, when I was at primary school here. And we had a duck that caused grievous anxiety to one of our neighbours, and she ended up taking us to Supreme Court over it. And it went through all the courts and ended up at the Supreme Court, and we ultimately lost the case. We had to get rid of our duck, which was pretty awful. But that made front page news, and I think it made a record at the time for the longest running front page human interest story. And so as children, we were on the front pages as well. And so I'd been exposed to this, I guess it was almost, I could see the illusion that was behind the media. And that really fascinated me. And then when in year 11, we called it Form 7, yeah, didn't we? Form 5. Form 5, couldn't remember for a minute.
We both were stretching our memories.
We studied semiotics and that really, the idea of where does meaning come from and how do we interpret meaning, and it kind of just turned my brain on my head. And I decided that I was so interested in the media that I wanted to study it. And so that's why I left Turek College and I went to Frankston Technical College, which had for my year 12, they had communications as a core subject. Right. I sort of headed towards that. And that ultimately led me on to going to RMIT and doing media studies and so on. And I thought initially that I was interested in television and film, but it really wasn't until I, at a gallery opening one day, I bumped into Roger Foley, who is also known as LSD Fogg. He's an illuminations artist, and he's wildly intelligent and eccentric and fascinating and so on. And he had just moved to Melbourne and wanted to start. He was working with the National Gallery, doing installations in there, and he had been approached by people to actually create stages for fashion. As well as that, he did the first light shows in Australia in the 60s, LSD Fogg, and was part of the Yellow House in Sydney and so on. So he was really, pedigreed, eccentric artist. I met him, and that just really changed life for me. I just all of a sudden realised that I wanted to work in the live arts, the performing arts, and so that I changed direction.
And that led to, so initially they were those art installations, but that also led you into catwalk work with the Australian War Board and Maggie Tabra. And
yes.
At a time in Australia where there was this real sense of we were stepping up and being on the international stage through
Absolutely.
Fashion and art.
Absolutely. And in fact, I think in the fashion world, we were forerunners to some extent, because all of a sudden we started playing around with theatrics on the catwalk, and it became there was an expression of a very individual style and a quirkiness that we had, and we were using tools that were just had never been used before. So when I started doing work with Maggie Tabra and the Fashion Design Council, there's been an exhibition on at the National Gallery recently where Jo Lane's films and Simon Burton's films and the designs of Australian fashion designers have been, celebrated up there, the 200 years of Australian fashion. Incredible. So I sort of lost my train of thought, but we were approached when we started doing the big shows here in Australia, and they were wild and they were very alternative and they were very exciting to be a part of. And then I went to London, and they didn't have the British Fashion Council were really just forming, and they were really just determining that they were going to do their own fashion stages like the London, Milan and Paris shows. And I just happened to be there at the right place at the right time. There were very few people who had actually been doing fashion there then of that type. So I got a job and I stayed for nearly 10 years.
And also dabbling in a little bit of theatre.
Oh, yes, of course.
In the West End.
Yeah, well, yes, it took me a while to get to the West End, of course, because that's really what, theatre is really what I loved. Mm. And so when I went over there, I started, I got involved with a small theatre company, and we produced a couple of plays for the Fringe Theatre, and then we even started our own Fringe Theatre up above a pub in Tufnell Park, and put on our own productions up there. We were very serious, and you know, there were Strindberg plays and Shakespeare and so on. But it took me some time to finally convince a production manager at Duncan Weldon Productions, who do the big revivalist shows in the West End. It took me a couple of years to convince him that he really needed me to work for him. I used to pester him endlessly. And ultimately, I got a job with them. And for the last year and a half, I worked in the West End doing that. So, you know, it was fantastic. It was very, very exciting.
And at a time too, Sally Bailey, where Australians going to London was very much almost like a rite of passage going to London. You know, there'd been, I guess, the intellectual trailblazers, so the Clive James and Germain and Barry Humphries had gone, and the bands had gone across as well, originally the Easy Beats, but the more alternative bands by that stage through Nick Cave and the Go-Betweens, Ed Cooper, others were all there, and there was a real sort of sense of Earl's Court was kind of, you know, kangaroo kind of patch and all that sort of thing. It was the beginning of that sense of Australians really kind of taking their place. Did you feel that energetically, or you were just kind of going with what was happening around you?
No, I think people were really interested in Australians because we came in with a fresh perspective. We came in sort of unfettered with that class system. It really didn't exist for us the way it did for them, and so they looked at us in a different way because we just stepped through doors. We didn't see the doors, you know.
Yes.
And it was really you know, the effects of that were very disarming. Mm. So we got a lot further, but also I think that we came over there. We all went over there with a very strong work ethic, and I kept, you know, forever people would say to me that they loved employing Australians because we worked so hard. And we were kind of committed to what it was that we were doing. So maybe it was because we were so far away from home and it was such an effort to get there that we had to work hard. We felt that we had to make the most of it when we were there. But we did good things.
10 years in London.
Mm-hmm.
What is your favourite memory of that time then?
It's definitely being in the theatres and being on stage and feeling as if you were kind of at one of the focal points of the arts in the world, you know. It just felt like that it didn't get any better than that. You were right where things were happening. It just felt so immediate and exciting. But at the same time, you know, there were all these other things that were so wonderful about being there too, which is the location and being accessible to, being able to go to, you know, Africa and Greece and Italy and these cultures that we were, you know, that we had only ever read about beforehand. And it really was a matter of stepping on a plane or stepping on a train or driving there, and you would get to these incredible places. It was just expansive. You know, it was brain altering.
Did you think much about home during that time?
Yeah, I guess I romanticised about it a bit, you know, fabulous, you know, Australia. Because just before I left, actually, I had done two really huge trips in a car around Australia. I'd driven up to Ayers Rock or Uluru. It was Ayers Rock at the time, Uluru, in my Volkswagen. And it was still 700 kilometres of dirt road. Stuart Highway was just dirt in those days. And I'd driven from Darwin back down to Melbourne. So I'd done these two massive trips that had kind of burnt an image into my head and made me think about Australia in a completely different way too.
Sally Bailey is our guest on the Wordy Rapping Hood. RPPFM is the station. She is the presenter of Arts About here on RPP, and she's also a candidate for the Arts Party for the seat of Dunkley. We'll come back after a musical interlude and start talking a little bit more about how you start shaping that political career, Sal. But I can't let you go without playing this. It is, of course, Australian Crawl from that incredible iconic record out of 1980. And this is almost the soundtrack for this neck of the woods. This is The Boys Light Up. From one of the most iconic Australian albums ever to be released, from Australian Crawl, and an equally iconic front cover featuring our guest here on The Wordy Rapping Hood. Sally Baillieu is our guest on RPP FM on this Friday. She is the presenter of Arts About here on RPP and is also the candidate for Dunkley in the upcoming federal election. Saturday week we go to the polls. So we've been talking about your growing up years here on the peninsula, going to London for a period of time, and then around about 1994, after about 10 years being in London, you think, I just go home.
Yeah.
What happened? What made you think it's time to come home?
It was one of those points in your life, and I don't think you have them very often, where things collide and there is a natural punctuation point. The theatre season finished, the fashion season had finished. I could either choose to stay on in the apartment that I was in at that time or cancel that, and I split up with a boyfriend, and it all happened at the same time. And I thought, you know what, this is a really great and easy exit point. I've been here 10 years, I think I should go home. It was just very spontaneous. I think I made that decision and was home in 6 weeks.
Yeah. And what did you come home to in terms of what you were thinking that your life in Australia might be about? Did you imagine and hope that you would pick up you'd be able to pick up your work in the theatre and the arts in London and fashion and come back? And what happened?
Well, I did do that, but it did take some time. And I think the thing that I came back to actually was the network. Because one of the things I think that you forget when you travel is that you are completely removed from a supporting network that basically describes to you and to everybody else around you who you are. And when you go to a foreign place, it's not there anymore. And it's liberating, you're free to be yourself, but it's also terrifying because you actually have to carve the person that you are out. And, you know, it takes some time. So I'd done that. I'd been over there 10 years and I had carved out this person that, an independent person that I thought that I was. But it was scary, and there was always times that I missed being part of that home network. And I also was sick of being a foreigner. So when I came home, I expected sort of this network of, all the same people to be there and to be sort of Sally Martin as I was when I left. And it wasn't at all. So it was a little bit shocking, actually. Mm. I didn't have a terrible time, but there was a great dislocation. It was a strange time. But I did get back and I did start to work again, and I freelanced and I got involved in corporate theatre, and I worked with the Melbourne International Festival, and I travelled a bit around the country and I got involved again. But the financial crisis hit, and I can't remember exactly what year that was, but it was 95 or something like that. Mm. And I had just taken a full-time job with a production company, last to be employed, first to go, lost my job, and it sent me into a bit of a spiral. So I went. I decided to go feral again, and I went up to far north Queensland and went to stay with my friend Will Baillieu, who's ultimately become my husband.
So Will Baillieu would have been a friend from the peninsula?
No, we didn't know each other at all. We knew each other because my cousin used to go out with her brother. So it was a sort of a familial thing the connection had been made in the city in Melbourne. Yeah, many years beforehand, as he was a boat builder on Phillip Island at the time when I first met him at 19. Mm. And we re-met again when I was about 30.
So at that point, had Will already been to the Olympics? Will Baillieu represented Australia in the rowing?
1972, yes, yeah. He had.
Very early on.
Yes. And then he was, of course, a member of the America's Cup team in 1983 that won. Mm. Mm.
So you've found yourself, as you, in your words, going feral, going to far north Queensland.
Yes.
And going to visit an old friend, and clearly that friendship turned into,
something else.
Exciting times.
Yeah.
And so then obviously then there's a decision to come back to the peninsula at some point and kind of set up life here on the peninsula. So that was obviously a very strong pull still for you.
Absolutely. You know, I had had a beautiful childhood here on the Mornington Peninsula growing up around Mount Eliza, and my best friend Vicky Parsons had lived down on the in Main Ridge. And I used to spend an enormous amount of time with her riding horses through Greensbush, as it used to be okay to do in those days. And so I kind of really had, and I'd also had been involved, you know, we'd met the surf, and I had a boyfriend who had made surfboards, and I spent all my time on the beaches when I was young. And so there was this sort of idyllic kind of dream in the back of my head that this was really where I wanted to end up, I suppose. Although it was never, I never really imagined it. I never thought about that a long time beforehand. It just kind of crystallised as I got older and met Will, and he lived down here, and I thought, yes, this would be wonderful to return. Mm. What a gorgeous place, and what a great place to bring up a family.
Mm. Which you did.
Which I did. I now have two teenagers who are both taller than I am. Mm. And they're at school here in Langwarrin at Woodley, so they're local Dunkleyites as well. And they are certainly challenging. Gorgeous, but challenging and very different kids.
And in terms of your the professional Sally Martin who became Sally Bailiw, you still have this professional self that you're thinking about. Obviously, you're raising family and being a mum and a wife and setting up a home. There's still a kind of a burning desire to still be the theatrical arts Sally. So when did she sort of start re-emerging after the family... raising of the family?
Well, I think poor little Pearl was only about two, actually, and I decided with great friend Swanee, who's here, who also was on Arts About with me earlier on, that we would do some amateur theatre, and we produced a couple of plays down at the Portsy Players, we were called, and I think maybe 2 or 3 years we did a couple of productions down there, which kind of got the juices flowing again a little bit. It was still very early days, and it was, you know, it certainly didn't become a proper job of any kind. But a little bit later, I decided that I loved this, and I really wanted to get it back into it again. And a great friend, Jenny Steele, started a theatre salon down in Rye, at Rosebud, actually. And I went along to that, and it was fabulous. And she would get these performers from Melbourne that already had great performances encapsulated that were, you know, that were transportable, and she would bring them down to her place, and this very select group of people, well, basically the amount of people that could manage to cram into her house would come along and see these performances. It was brilliant, but it was hard work, and she tired of it, and she was going to stop doing it. I said, you can't. And I kind of took up the baton, and I had friends who ran a wine bar in Rye, and we said, come on, let's do it there. And so we started theatre at Wine Lounge, and that went for a few years down there.
And then you discovered the taste for community radio. So you found your way to RWP and through your friend Karen Fairfax.
Karen and I, we were actually doing a program at Frankston Arts Centre, in fact, actually. We were doing a program called The Lineup, and James Rain was our MC for that, and it was a musical mentoring program. And we got young musicians and gave them the opportunity to work on stage with professional sound engineers and you know, invite their families and peers along to see them. It was, you know, developmental for young musicians. And we really needed help because we were, you know, desperately looking. There was no money, of course, and we were just working constantly and really struggling to get, you know, to make ends meet. And so I thought, I contact the local radio station and see whether or not I can talk them into giving us some help. Well, of course, they didn't have any funds either. But I met Brendan Telfer, the station manager, and he pestered Karen and I for about 6 months and said, you've got to come and do a show here. He said, we don't do radio. We don't know anything about radio.
And his answer was, well, I think you can speak, and I think you're quite passionate about the arts. And I think then you enlisted your old friend David Rain to name your program.
Yeah, David named the show, yes. Arts About was his idea. And, it's gone from strength to strength. And 4 years later, I've been doing it now for 4 years. I find that incredibly hard to believe. It's I love it. I actually really like it. And I think I'm happier here than I've been, you know, doing anything really.
And what's underscored that too, Sal, is your very long-standing commitment to an involvement in the arts as a way of building community and being part of the community.
Yeah.
And in some ways it feels like that's been an organic thing for you, that you've just followed the thing that you've loved, and through that you've realised just how powerful community art, artistic expression, being able to have the freedom, I guess, to express yourself is so powerful.
Absolutely it is. I mean, on so many different levels it's powerful. And it is organic, but it's absolutely impossible to refute the benefits that you see. If you work in the arts, you see things happen around you. You see the responses that you get from people around you, from members of the community that are affected by the work that you do, and you see the benefit. It's a byproduct, but it's a really it's an incredibly valuable byproduct of artistic practice. And you know, people are connected by it. They're drawn out of their ordinary circumstances. They're exposed to things that they wouldn't necessarily be exposed to. And the benefits of that, I mean, particularly in children, you know, you see kids just getting things and changing their lives. It changes people's lives. It certainly changed mine.
Mm. Yeah. And it forces you to think outside the box.
Yeah,
it's often, or gives very you an
avenue to do that,
it's a form of expression. It's all sorts of things, and then you find yourself at a particular point in your life, and you think, "I'm going to run in a federal election." We might talk about that a bit more. We'll take a short break. Sally Bailiu is our guest here on the Wordy Rapping Hood. She is the candidate for the Arts Party for the federal seat of Dunkley for the federal election Saturday week here in Australia. She's also the presenter and voice of Arts About here on RPP FM. I have had to physically restrain Sally Bailiu. She's just sat back down. The wonderful, wonderful Miriam McCabe, and the piece from her called Pada Pada, which another selection of Sal's as we wind our way through the Wordy Rapping Hood on this Friday. It's about 18 minutes away from 1 o'clock, and absolutely transported Sally back to her time in London. Mm. All the great African music and that fabulous kind of melting pot that England was and is currently being challenged as we're watching the Brexit polls coming in. I'm just looking at some early polls coming in and still very much on a knife edge with early swings to both sides of the Remain and Leave campaigns. And I think we're all holding our breath a little bit, because whichever way that goes is going to have significant and serious implications, both for Prime Minister David Cameron and relationships around the world. But just a little bit of a recollection of that Miriam McCabe song, because your whole face lit up when you played that. Some lovely memories for you from that, for that music, because that's the thing that being in a place like London and Europe actually really connects you to, that connection to all those.
That was absolutely extraordinary, living in London during that time and going to some of those venues, the Forum and the Africa Centre and so on, and the artists from all around the world that were coming there. It was just brilliant. Mm.
And, of course, Miriam McCabe and Hugh Masekela lived in exile.
Yeah.
They weren't able to live in their native Africa, so they were...
Yes, for some extraordinary length
period of time. Yeah, and I think through music, that's also been such a great educator, certainly for me, and the arts being a really powerful way to educate and inform.
Mm. The shared experience that's created, you know, that's what I think one of the things that is absolutely central to this love of arts that I have is that it gives you an opportunity to experience the world from a different perspective, or to see somebody else's perspective. And my goodness, don't we all need that all around, you know, across the universe, it seems, even at the moment, to understand other people's positions. It's very powerful.
And doing it through the creative sector is such a powerful thing to do.
Look, it's an obvious given. Mm.
And so running for politics, running for elected office is a pretty interesting intersect. We've talked about, I guess, the power of the arts to educate and inform off and on political and social issues. You're running as a candidate in the seat of Dunkley, which is a retiring sitting Liberal member, Bruce...
Bilson.
Bruce Bilson, who's a former small business manager, a minister, held that seat since 1996. It's a marginal Liberal seat, 5.6%. 11 people contesting this seat.
Yes, who knew that?
You're running for the fledgling Arts Party. So tell us initially, it's Brian Brown's brainwave, I think, to...
PJ Collins, actually.
Tell us about the founders of the Arts Party.
Well, PJ Collins is a filmmaker and Nicholas Gledhill is a friend of his. There's a small group. They live in Sydney and they're all artists and they were, you know, like most artists have been probably for the last 18 months, bemoaning the political state of affairs, this sort of the massive wrench of funding that was removed from the Australia Council with Senator George Brandis's sort of one fell swoop of his hand. And I think we were all absolutely in shock over that, the lack of consultation and essentially the sort of the disrespect that gave to the arts community to have done that without any consultation basically said, we don't really think that that's that important, or you're not doing a very good job of it. Let's wrestle that away from you. So these PJ and his various friends and colleagues decided that they really wanted to do something about it. Why didn't we run a political party? Now they're artists. They've got no inkling really probably what that would entail. But they set up a crowdfunding site. And it started to go viral, and of course, it was passed out through all artists. And I saw it, and I went away in last month in May, and just as I left, just before I left, I saw this thing come up on Facebook, and I thought, yeah, we need somebody to be speaking about this in Canberra. This is not okay. I want to support them, so I sent a little money along, and I said I wanted to become a member, and I went away. And I came back about 3 weeks later, or just before I came back, actually, I got an email saying, with a little update that the political party, they'd reached their goal, they were able to stand a whole lot of senators, but they had no people standing in the House of Representatives in Victoria at all. Was anybody interested? And I thought, oh, goodness me, somebody's got to stand. Look, I sent him in a message and I said, look, I'll do it. I'll put my hand up. Here's my, this is who I am and so on. But I'm sure you'll have lots of other people. But, I'll just put my hand up because sometimes you have to put your hand up. Hmm. Well, when I returned home, he rang me the day I arrived back and said, great to have you on board. And I said, what do you mean? And nobody else had done so. So there you are. I'd put my hand up, and there I didn't want to back down, but I was a bit surprised that there I was doing it. So I had really only 3.5 weeks to mount a campaign and get going. So it's slow. I feel as if that really my efforts are about getting the word out there, reminding people that what's actually happening and what's happening to the arts affects all of us. It's a really base swipe at our basic culture.
Why should government fund arts? It's kind of the perennial question. People who think that there's a limited purse, and we need to fund healthcare, we need to fund infrastructure, we need to fund schools, we need to fund hospitals, all sorts of things. Why should artists be indulged in that luxury to be funded by taxpayers?
The arts are embedded in every single one of those things that you mentioned. Artists are out there working one way or another, and they're contributing to all of those things. They're contributing to education, they're contributing to health, community life. I can't even imagine what it would be like if we didn't have an artistic resource in our communities, if arts was not included in our communities. We are human beings. We have an innate desire to create and to communicate with each other. And the arts essentially enable communication, and they enable us to interact with each other, to understand each other, And so I think that we have an absolute, it's an absolute necessity that our government funds these things in order to have a population and a community that is worth living in, that is pleasurable to live in, that interacts with each other, that communicates with each other. So I think, you know, education, I think, really is one of the big, big major ones. And we realise we're in a state at the moment where there's virtually no arts education compulsorily in schools at all. It's only the wealthy schools, only the private schools that are able to really afford to run programs that include arts in it. And yet arts are the things that teach children all sorts of different cognitive skills. Music, particularly. 70% of kids in primary school don't have access to musical education. We know how important building blocks are for musical education, you know, for children to be exposed to music. It enables them to develop cognitive practices. It enables them to, you know, the relationship between music and the way that our brain works is profound, and it doesn't need, you know, me to be explaining it. Scientists can talk about it. The arts have a profound effect on all sorts of social mechanisms, and that's why the government should be funding them.
And that's why you're standing. Mm-hmm. Part of who you are, you're talking about, you know, putting your hand up to the arts party and sending off an email saying, oh, well, you know, I guess if nobody else steps up, I will. Yes. Part of who you are, Sally Bailiw, is a pretty powerful name attached to who mm-hmm. you are, brother-in-law of former Victorian Premier Ted yep. Bailiw. Has that been – so you've watched it from – the sidelines,
yeah.
And we've seen, you know, I think we watched Ted Bailiw in many ways step away from what had been a fairly brutal experience for him toward the latter part of his premiership in yeah. Victoria. You've seen how brutal politics can be. Has it been a help or a hindrance to have that name attached to this campaign?
Oh, it's certainly meant that I've stepped in with great trepidation, of course. I have been aware for a long time the culture of politics is very unpleasant and dangerous and awful. I think all of the parties, you know, their modus operandi is really, really questionable. It's not about community benefit mostly. It's actually about getting into power, maintaining power, and the terrible media spin. So I'm very, very wary of getting involved in it. And yet I still think that there are times when you have to speak up about things. So perhaps it's naive. I mean, you know, there's a certain amount of naivety, I guess, of me stepping up there and saying, yes, I'll do it, and this is why. But I guess that's what we rely on. We certainly rely on that in the arts. You know, we as a community, our government knows that artists are compelled to create art, that whatever you do, however you treat them, they're still going to be artists and they're still going to be making art and we're still going to be the recipients of it. I just think that we should be questioning that, and we should be saying, you know, should we really be exploiting artists? Should we really be exploiting people who have ideals and want to improve, you know, social outcomes? Should we just assume that because they are naive and that they do have a great sense of justice and right, that we should just let them do it and not contribute? I don't know. I think if people agree with those views, then get on board and help participate. Mm. Say, you know, step up and say things. Step up and stand up for what you believe in.
Going into this federal election, we've seen, in fact, one of the triggers for this double dissolution election was a motivation by the federal government to minimise the number of minor parties that might actually be elected in federal office. But in actual fact, it would seem by all anecdotal reports that there are more independents, more minor parties stepping up and asking people to vote. I guess this has been your moment, and this is your moment on the stump. There's 11 people contesting the seat of Dunkley, and a really interesting cross-section.
Absolutely.
That gives a sense of the kind of people who are putting their hands up. The three majors, I guess we'd call them, the Greens I'd put in there. So you've got the ALP, the Liberal candidate, the Greens. The Hinch Party are in your seat. The Family First, Rise Up Australia, Animal Justice, the Lib Dems, the Independent, who presents the Anarchy Hour program on 3CR, and the Christians, and you as the Arts Party.
Yep.
So if we vote for you, we've heard you're very passionate. We know how invested you've been in the arts for a very long time, sort of since a very early age. But what does voting for the Arts Party realistically mean in the event you might actually get someone up as a minor party?
Look, it's ideally we want people up in the Senate, but if we got somebody up as in the House of Representatives, then I think it's a great opportunity to proliferate things, community-based events to engage people. Now, I know in Dunkley we've got a lot of artists. We've got a lot of young artists who are specifically the ones that have been damaged in the small to medium sector by the government cuts most lately. And we have some really major institutions also in Dunkley. We have the Frankston Arts Centre, and we've got the Mornington Peninsula Regional Gallery, and we have the McClellan Gallery. Now, those institutions are there because they attest to a community that's really committed to an artistic dialogue. And we're really lucky to have them. They're world-class institutions. What I would really love to do is to enable those institutions, work with those institutions to get their access to their facilities out to people that don't necessarily usually work in that, interact with those areas. Mm. I'd also really like to get some artists in residences or artists working in schools. To me, that's one of the most important issues, is that we need to have arts education in schools and arts access in schools. So developing programs that enable artists and institutions and organisations to interact, that would be my, the thing that I'd like to hit.
All of this, Sally Bailiu, is centred around a sense of community and a spirit of place.
Yep.
You love the peninsula. You've put your hand up to represent one of two federal seats that take in part of the peninsula. So Dunkley taking in Frankston, Langwarrin, Skye, bit of Seaford, Mount Eliza down to Mornington.
Yep.
What does this place mean to you?
Well, it's home. It's kind of it's my centre. It's where I began. It's where I got my first sense of myself. So I guess I'm just anchored to it. I feel like when you want to do something, you want to do it for the person that you are and from the feet that you've come up from. And I feel very strongly that this is my place, and I've got to give back.
I wish you well on election day. There'll be, I suspect, some familiar RPP faces helping you in your...
I hope so, yes.
..out at the polls. Sally Bailiu is the voice of Arts About here on RPP FM. She's also the Arts Party candidate for Dunkley in the federal election, which is Saturday week. And we wish you well.
Thank you so much.
And enjoy your experience in federal politics, your campaigning experience.
My short life.
And I'm sure you'll have many interesting things to tell the family.
Thanks so much, Tracy.
We'll finish off with an incredible piece of music. It's kind of got the crazy name, Maggot Brain.
Funkadelic. It's about the cosmos.
It is about the cosmos, which is kind of what we need to remember when we're thinking about elected office and why we're all here, and I guess in your... and our point of view, where the arts fit into it all. Thanks, Sal. It's been great to talk with you.
You too, Tracy. Thank you.
From Funkadelic. And their track is called Maggot Brain.